listening to the CCA Podcast.
I'm excited to continue with you in this journey that we are on of walking through this word, walking through the scriptures. If you're just joining us, we began at the first of the year using the chronological Bible, which is a way of trying to put the scripture into context and getting to understand it within the historical flow. And so we're using a chronological Bible by Legard Smith called the Daily Bible. And we actually have copies available out in the lobby, you know, at the information desk if you want to get one of those and join with us, or if you want to go get it on Kindle. It's only $10 on Kindle, and so it's available in that way. And you can walk with us on this journey of going through the scriptures. It's going to be a year-long journey, and we're going to take kind of different focuses throughout, but right now we're in the middle of what's called the Pentateuch, which is the first five books of the Bible, and we've been reading through Numbers this past week. One of the things that we see and we discover in the context of reading through this word is that there are principles for life that affect us in every arena of our life. So it's not just principles for how we behave like when we're in church. It's principles for that affect the way in which we look at all of life, the way in which we look at government, the way in which we look at leadership around us, the way in which we respond in our work environment. It's the way in which we respond in our families. And one of the things that we need to recognize is that in every arena of our life, there are two aspects that are always going to impact us, or two ways of behaving that are always going to influence us, because in every arena of our life, we are both leaders and followers. There are aspects in which we are called to lead, and there are aspects in which we are called to follow. And a huge part of being a Christ follower is getting that right, is understanding our leadership function and understanding our followership function. Now, we learn about leaders a lot by watching people who do it well, or by being under good leadership. I want you to just take a moment and reflect about a good leader that you've had and why that person was a good leader. Just think about it for just a second. A good leader that you've had in your life and why that person was a good leader. Now, I want you to take a moment and share that with the person next to you, okay? Now, if you're sitting with someone that you know well, that might be, it's going to probably be a little easier. If you're sitting next to someone that you don't know very well, you're going to have to kind of, you know, overcome that initial barrier and talk about it. But in groups of two or three, I'm going to give you a couple of minutes to talk about who was a good leader in your life and why were they a good leader, okay? 1, 2, 3, go. Okay, your 2 minutes are up. That went fast, didn't it? Now, some of you are just totally into it, and others are a little bit like, I'm not sure. I've told you a number of times that one of the key leaders in my life was Bob Stone, who just announced this week that he is going to be retiring from pastoring at Shoreline Community Church up just north of us, one of our Assembly of God sister churches. Bob was a youth pastor here at Calvary, and so was my youth pastor for a couple of years while I was in college, and I helped come alongside of the youth group and was an intern under Bob, and then actually went into ministry with him in co-pastoring a church down in the U District called Calvary Chapel. And I think that probably the most important thing about Bob, or one of the things that stands out, is that he was a purveyor of hope. He really could instill into us, especially as we were a young church just starting out. We started out with a core of seven people down in the U District, meeting in the movie house, which was on the corner of 50th and University Way. And you know, we'd sit there around the fireplace, and maybe there's 12 of us sitting there, sitting on the couches, and Bob was like, "This is great, and it's going to get greater. You know, God is building a church here, and you are key to it, and this is amazing." And we're like, yeah, you know. We are the greatest thing in the world. Bob was able to do that in an incredible way. He conveyed a sense of hope and of confidence in what God was going to do. Now, one of the things I know about Bob is that he didn't necessarily start out that way. That was actually an attitude and a leadership quality that Bob had to learn and had to grow into. Now, he was pretty young at that point, and so he learned it fast, and part of it was his natural personality. But the interesting thing is that leadership is not something that just happens to us. Leadership is something that we grow in. Just like followership is not something that just happens. We need to grow in followership as well. And next week, I'm going to focus in particular on this aspect of what does Moses teach us about followership. But today, let's look at how Moses grew in his leadership. We're actually going to look at four different aspects, and we might call them four different regimes of leadership that Moses needed to go through. And so we've got a picture of it here, a chart. Moses is actually in the growth of his leadership. He's a rather fascinating individual because he kind of has to take the Israelites through four different phases of leadership, four different regimes, if you will. And it begins with slavery. So if you take your notes, you'll see that there are four different regimes that are listed here. The regime of slavery, then the regime of anarchy, and then of equity, and then of hierarchy. Now, that might seem a little bit technical, but basically what happens is Moses starts out with a group of people who are entrenched in slavery. And so all they know is despotism. All they know is Pharaoh, who's absolutely controlling their life and keeping them under his thumb. And so there's slavery around them, but there's also slavery in them. You know, part of overcoming slavery is understanding that we really have been set free. For we as Christians, we understand that we were slaves to what? Slaves to sin. And part of overcoming sin is beginning to recognize that there's not just slavery around us, but there's slavery in us. We respond like slaves. And so Moses has to take the people from slavery, but rather than moving them right into kind of a democratic way, it usually gets worse before it gets better. It kind of goes down before it goes up. And so they move into this regime of anarchy, where it's like, okay, we're free now. We're free, okay, we're free, and we can do whatever we want. But that doesn't work out so well. And then gradually, this sense of identity as a people begins to build, and they move into this realm of equity where it's like, yeah, we're all God's people. We all have something to contribute. We can all hear the voice of the Lord. But in the midst of that, there's struggle that comes as well. Because not everybody hears equally well, and not everybody responds with equal obedience. And some people don't, their motivation can be a little twisted in relationship to how they want to exercise control. And so it then needs to move into hierarchy, where there's an ordering of relationship and an ordering of a hierarchy. Who's following who? And so let's begin to walk through these four regimes one by one. One of the things that Moses, in the midst of going through this process, is we've got to recognize that it was not easy. In fact, there's a passage in Numbers 11:12 where Moses says this: "Was it I who conceived all this people? Was it I who brought them forth? That you should say to me, 'Carry them in your bosom as a nurse carries a nursing infant to the land which you swore to their fathers.'" Literally, what Moses is saying is that I have to carry them as a nursing father. He uses a really interesting metaphor, a nursing father. There's no such thing as a nursing father. But he says, "You're making me into a nursing father. I've got to carry these people. This is hard work." And one of the things that we've got to recognize about leadership, anyone who genuinely cares for the people that they lead has this burden of being a nursing father or a nursing mother, carrying the people like you carry them in, like a mom carries a child close to her bosom. And it's not an easy task. Leadership is many times a lonely task. And so let's look at Moses in the steps that he goes through. So first of all, we have this regime of slavery in Egypt. Head on down to the notes. There we go. The regime of slavery. We see this especially in the burning bush and in the escape from Egypt. The leadership lesson that Moses first of all needs to learn is that God is trustworthy. He has to learn that God is trustworthy. God comes to Moses and he meets him. Where does he meet him? Very first meeting with God, at the burning bush. So Moses is out in the wilderness and God comes to him and he places a call on him and he says, "I am going to use you to set my people free, to deliver them out of Egypt." And you see, Moses, he's in this place. Slavery is inside of him just as much as it's around him. And Moses begins by saying, "Here am I." But it quickly descends to, "Who am I?" Like, who am I to do this? Moses wants a guarantee from God that if I take this responsibility on, everything is going to work out right. That I won't get, pun not intended, that I won't get burned if I accept this responsibility. And the interesting thing is that God doesn't give him a guarantee. What does God say? God doesn't give him a guarantee. God simply says, "I will be with you. I'm going to be with you." And that's got to be enough for you. But But one of the things that Moses has to overcome is the challenge is he's got to overcome his sense of inferiority, this defeatism, this sense that, man, I can't make this happen. In fact, there's a couple of phrases that he uses in Exodus 4. He says, "Pardon your servant, Lord. I've never been eloquent." Or, "Pardon your servant, Lord. Please send someone else." Moses has a powerful sense of his own inability. Make someone else your agent. Make someone else your captain. I'm not in a capacity to do this. So God finally relents and gives him whom? Aaron. But the whole thing with Aaron is it doesn't turn out all that well. You know, Aaron is actually the one who ends up leading the people into apostasy later. It doesn't help us not to trust God when he says, go ahead and do it. I'm going to be with you. Every single one of us, when it comes to that initial call to take a step of responsibility, to step up and to take on a leadership challenge, there's not one of us, I don't think, who doesn't sense inside a sense of inferiority, a sense of, man, I'm not up to that task. And God, like he says to Moses, is saying to us, hey, you know what? I am with you, and that's enough. Well, the temptation of the leader in the midst of the regime of slavery, if you're Pharaoh, the temptation of the leader is to think, well, I'm God. In this case with Moses, his temptation is to defer, to say, hey, send somebody else. How many of you have been in a situation where there was an opportunity that was placed in front of you to step up to leadership in some capacity? And where you said, nah. Moses' first reaction was to defer. That's the leader's temptation. Now, God kept pressing. God was good to Moses. He kept pushing in. He kept saying, okay, Moses, no. We're gonna make this. But the temptation of the leader is to defer. The temptation of the followers in the regime of slavery is fatalism, is passivity. Passivity that comes out of fatalism. To say, you know what? Things are never going to change. Things have always been the same. What did the Israelites say? It's like, hey, things are getting tougher on us. As the plagues were being placed upon the Egyptians, and the Egyptians started laying their heavy hand upon the Israelites, and the Israelites complained and said, no, wait a minute. We're having to make bricks now and gather straw at the same time, and this is getting really, really tough. Just let it go. Leave it the same. And that's the follower's temptation in the regime of slavery, is always to be passive, to be a fatalist. And one of the things that God has to do with people who are enslaved to sin is to show them, no, it can be different. I can set you free. I am going to set you free. Change is coming. Well, Moses moves on to the realm of anarchy. Anarchy, we see that especially, the regime of anarchy, in the situation of going into the wilderness, and then especially the golden calf. The leadership lesson in that context that Moses needs to learn is to stand firm. You know, anarchy is not an easy kind of a circumstance. And it's not easy to stand up against people who are just kind of beginning to feel their oats and wanting to respond and to just do what they want to do. Oh yeah, we're free now. Okay, I can do whatever I want to do. And into that context, the leadership lesson is that the leader has to learn to stand firm. That was not easy for Moses to do. It was not an easy thing for him to stand firm against the craziness of the people. God was bringing the people into something that was unfamiliar to them. The challenge, the leadership challenge, was he was having to move people from the familiar to the unfamiliar. To move people from the familiar to the unfamiliar. There's one thing that is the case with groups of people is that they always want to hang on to what is familiar. There's a tendency to want to stay the same. You know, in church work, it's always that way. There's been a certain way of doing things in the past. There's been a certain way of responding, maybe a certain style of worship, maybe a certain way in which groups were led or programs were led, and then change needs to happen. And almost always, there's this reticence. There's this tendency amongst us, no, we want to just stay the same. Just keep it the same. And Moses is now having to move these people from the familiar, where they have bread that they have from the wheat that they grind, and they get their water from the Nile River, and he's moving them out into the desert, where now the bread is going to come manna from the Lord, and God's going to supply the water. And it's like, whoa, this is unfamiliar territory. God says this is not going to be something that's going to happen overnight. In fact, he says, it says in Exodus 13:17, Now when the Pharaoh had let the people go, God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, even though it was near. For God said, the people might change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. So God says, okay, this is going to be a gradual process. Slowly but surely, I'm going to take them through the wilderness and through the desert, and they're going to learn to follow me. So the leadership challenge is to move them from the familiar to the unfamiliar. The temptation of the leader in that context is to give up or to give in. The temptation of the leader is to give up or give in. Aaron, he gave in. So the people come and they say, we don't know what's going on with this Moses. We don't know where he's ended up. In fact, 32:1 says this, now when the people saw Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, the people assembled about Aaron and said to him, come, make us a God who will go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us from the land of Egypt, we don't know what has become of him. As for this fellow, we have no idea what's going on with him. And so the temptation of the leader is to give up or give in. The temptation of the follower is to have a short memory. Really short memory. This fellow Moses, as if they didn't even know who he was. One of the biggest struggles in the church and with people who are followers of God is to have a short memory. That we just simply forget the goodness, the good things that God has done. The Israelites, you know, this was an amazing circumstance, wasn't it? They had seen God put the plagues on the people of Egypt, seen God deliver them out of Egypt, seen God take them across the Dead Sea, opening up the water, closing the waters upon the Egyptian soldiers. They had seen miraculous provision of water in the desert. They'd seen all these things, and how quickly they forget. I've seen in myself my own tendency to have God really, really, really come through for me. Maybe in a financial sense, you know, coming through at the point of need where I, you know, I didn't see how provision was going to come, but then God came and he brought the provision. And then just within weeks or within, you know, just a short period of time, there comes another hurdle, another barrier, and it's like, oh, you know, woe is me. We as people tend to have a short memory. And in this time in the desert, that was one of the hugest problems. And that's why God, one of the things that he did was build into the system a way of remembering. Passover was the very first celebration that they celebrated. And it was to be at the first of the year, every year at the beginning. New Year's Day comes and we're into Passover. And we're going to remember this powerful thing that God did in delivering us from Egypt. It was a systematic way of remembering. And so one of the things that a leader has to direct people in is in helping them to remember, helping them to recall. And to be honest, I don't think that I've done a very good job with that as your leader in constantly calling to mind and remembering the good things that God has done, to call attention to it. Because it's only in calling attention to those good things that God has done that we hold on to hope and that we grow in the direction God wants us to go. Well, what happens in the midst of this anarchy is that Moses is really tested in his resolve. Because the people are driving him crazy. And, you know, at the very time, as I pointed out last week, the very moment that God is making promises to Moses about God being with the people and saying, I want to be present among you, the people are down below saying, we don't even know what happened with this Moses. Aaron, make us gods. And Aaron's like, well, bring me your gold. And so he, you know, puts it in the furnace and makes the molten gold and then forms a calf. But later he tells Moses, well, Moses, you know, the people kind of forced my hand and said, make us gods. And so I said, okay, well, bring us your gold. And so I made this molten thing and then out came this calf. Just kind of happened. And so Moses' resolve to stick with the people is really tested. In leadership, in any leadership capacity that we're in, there will be some point in time where our resolve to stick with the people we're leading is going to be tested. You know, even with our kids. Now, I realize that, you know, we don't like say, okay, I'm just going to get rid of my kids. But sometimes, don't we in our hearts and spirits, it's like, whew, if I could get rid of these kids. There's always going to be a time when our resolve is tested. And in fact, Moses, God even puts the test in front of Moses in a pretty concrete way and says, Moses, these people have rebelled against me, and their rebellion is an abomination in my eyes. And so leave me alone. God says to Moses, leave me alone. It's the most amazing kind of interaction that we see in Scripture. God's telling Moses to leave me alone. He says, leave me alone and let me destroy this people, and I'm going to make out of you a new nation. Now, did God mean that? Well, I don't know. I don't think God, that was his plan at all. But God himself is putting Moses to the test. Like, how much are you committed to these people? How much are you with them? How much do you identify with these people? And so Moses responds so incredibly well, and he says, if you have to blot me out of your book, blot me out of your book, but keep your hand on these people. Don't leave these people. If you leave these people, what are the Egyptians going to say? If you leave these people, what are the other nations going to say? They're going to say you weren't strong enough to bring them out. You brought them out, but you weren't strong enough to keep them. God, for the sake of your name, hold on to these people. And so Moses identifies fully. And so in moving to the next leadership lesson of equity, as the people are beginning to form, are beginning to get an understanding of who they are, the leadership lesson for Moses is to fully identify with the people. The leadership lesson is to fully identify with the people. A leader can only hear what God is saying to the people if he fully identifies with the people. So, basically, in terms of a church like ours, the pastors like me, we can't hear from God what is his plan for the church unless there's a sense of identity and identifying with the church, unless there's a genuine love, a genuine burden of the heart. You know, Jesus says that there are some leaders who are, he calls them hirelings. He says the hireling doesn't lay his life down for the sheep. He doesn't care enough. If you're only doing it for what you can get out of it, you're never going to lay your life down for a sheep. So the hireling, when the wolf comes, is going to run. But a leader has to learn to fully identify, to say, these are my people. This is my family. And it doesn't matter if it costs me an awful lot. It doesn't matter if it costs me everything. I'm willing to lay my life down for the sheep. Jesus is the ultimate leader in that respect because he lays his life down for the sheep. And Moses had to learn that lesson to identify with the people. The challenge in this time of equity is a little bit different. It's a little bit more complex. It's to recognize that not all people are granted the same status, that not everyone hears equally well. You see, what's happening is that in this period of equity, people are beginning, democracy is beginning to kind of form and develop. And so people are recognizing, you know, well, I have something to contribute and I have something to give and I can help this happen. And one of the things they need to recognize is that not everybody's exactly on the same status and not everybody hears equally well. One of the things that happens is that the Miriam and Aaron, they rise up and they say, go ahead and go to that. Miriam and Aaron began to talk against Moses because of his Cushite wife, for he had married a Cushite. And has the Lord spoken only through Moses? They asked. Hasn't he also spoken through us? And the Lord heard this. Listen to my words. Then the Lord responds. When there's a prophet among you, I, the Lord, reveal myself to them in visions, and I speak to them in dreams. But this is not true, my servant Moses. He's faithful in all my house, and with him I speak face to face, clearly and not in riddles. He sees the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? During this time of equity, what happens with Moses is there are different individuals, people with responsibility, Moses and or Aaron and Miriam, his own brother and sister, the sons of Korah, the followers of Korah, the 12 spies, all of them, there's this coming into leadership and trying to assert their own agenda and their own control. And Moses and the people have to recognize, you know what? Not everybody has the same status. God is speaking to Moses differently than he's speaking to others. One of the things that I think is one of the difficult things in relationship to church and the leadership of a church is the question of who's hearing from God. And I believe with all my heart that God pulls us together and that there's an equality in the body of Christ. We stand equally before the Lord. We stand together before him at the foot of the cross. And we're all able to hear. But there is also this responsibility that God places on certain people in leadership, giving them authority where they're hearing differently and they have a responsibility to hear. And to be honest, that is one of those burdens of leadership that's not easy to carry. Because any of us who are in leadership, we recognize sometimes we get it wrong. We don't always hear right. And yet part of learning to be followers in that context is that willingness to submit to leadership even if we don't sense it's always going in the right direction. Is that scary? There's a certain scariness in that. There's that sense of confidence and trust then that we put in God and say, you know what, Lord? I'm gonna submit to the leadership of this congregation even if I don't always agree with it. Because that's how you establish what this interrelationship between leadership and followership. There is a, you place people in positions of authority, and it's my responsibility to listen and to heed. Now the temptation of the leader in this case is to bend a popular opinion. It's to bend a popular opinion. Boy, I'll tell you, in any leadership capacity, if we sense that popular opinion is moving in a particular direction, if all the tweets are going in one way, it's pretty hard to say, okay, I'm gonna you know, hold to what I sense God is saying here. You know? The leader's temptation is to bend a popular opinion. The temptation of the followers is to make the group your God. And that's exactly what happened with the Israelites. So it's like God blocked the way for them to go into the promised land. And they said, well, we don't care if God's blocking the way. We're going to press in. We're going to take this land. Okay. You know, and to make the group the God. Well, I'm going to, I think I'm going to just keep working on this next week in terms of followership, and we'll move to hierarchy next week. We'll talk about some of the aspects of leadership and followership in a little bit We'll just keep working on this next week. But let's just talk for a little bit about what does this mean for us? What it means for us, I think, is that every single one of us has a leadership challenge and a followership challenge. Every single one of us is being called at this point in our life to lead in some way and to follow in some way. The second thing it means is that we can never be a good leader unless we've learned to be a good follower. Not everyone is called to lead in terms of large groups of individuals. But certainly every one of us is called to follow well. And following well is not blind submission, but it's following well is to show support and loyalty, but at the same time to exercise discernment and to recognize that the popular is not always the appropriate. And to speak into the lives of leaders. We begin a lot of times in this regime of slavery. Every one of us begins as a slave to sin. And God sets us free and delivers us out of that. And we have to be absolutely certain about where the journey is going. That God is making us free, is delivering us, and we can trust Him. The tendency to turn back to slavery is very real. Isn't it amazing how people, even those who have been delivered from real struggles in relationship to sin and the control of sin over their lives, can turn back to the familiar and the garlic and the leeks and the onions of Egypt begin to look really good. This is a real thing, and I know right now in our congregation, some of you as parents are dealing with that with kids who the garlic and leeks and onions, the addictive behaviors related to drugs and alcohol or sexuality, it's all looking really, really good, really enticing. And that temptation to fall back into slavery is a real thing. Another thing we need to recognize is that in a stage where we don't always see everything completely in control, we need to recognize that God is the one who's making His covenant known. That God is wanting to let the principles of this word seep into our hearts. And that sometimes the best action when things are not clear is to slow down and hold on to what you know. Whenever you're in the fog and driving in the fog, what's the best course of action? To drive slowly enough that you can hold on to the white line. And whenever we find ourselves in a place of not knowing exactly the direction, we slow down enough to be able to watch this white line. Last thing is that let's hold on to memory. Let's hold on to what we see God do and what we know that He's doing. Let's celebrate the things that where God has come through so unmistakably and so powerfully that it's like, oh man, God, You are good. I'd like the worship team to come on up. We're gonna just sing and affirm God's goodness and His completeness and the fact that He is leading us in the way that He wants us to go. I'm so longing for I'm not even sure how exactly to express it, because there's this sense in me of like we are I don't know, we're just really close to and on the edge of grabbing a hold of the Lord's leadership in a way that's going to propel us forward. But I also recognize that sometimes it's not exactly clear. You know, I recognize my own inability and my own weakness, that there's that sense sometimes of like, Lord, you know, where are you taking us here, and what exactly is going on here? Let's keep hanging in there together. Let's keep seeking Him together. Let's listen closely to Him together, and let's pray that in terms of the growth of leadership, that with God's help we follow well and we lead well, that we step up to the responsibilities that He's putting in front of us, but that we also are incredibly supportive of those that God has placed in leadership. And I'm trying to say that in a way that doesn't sound self-serving, but it's sounding self-serving to me. So maybe I better be like, you know, Pastor Scott and just say, okay, I'm going to step off now. Jesus, You ultimately are the one who leads us. You ultimately are the good shepherd. Now let us, Lord, learn from Your leadership, and let us learn from the principles that Moses went through, and let us grow step by step. And Lord, let us lead our children well, and let us lead our students well, and let us help our students to grow in their own leadership. And Lord, let us have an impact on the world around us because we listen to You well. And Lord, for those of us who You're calling to take a step in leadership, and where we've been really reluctant because we've said, man, we can't do that, let there be a growth and an affirmation in the sense of where You say, hey, this is going to be enough. I'm going to be with You.